Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis with the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast. Today I have a special guest, Raghi Horner. Welcome, Raghi.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Raghi is an investor extraordinaire, and I'll let her tell her story so you get an idea of who she is and all that fun stuff. I love having people that have been doing the same investing for decades. And Raghi, why don't we just jump right in and just basically say, how the heck did you get started in investing? And more importantly, what kind of investing do you do?
So as far as the investing goes, the investing was really spurred on about the time I was 15, because my deal with my mom was, if I were to get a job in high school, 25% has to be invested into the market. I was 15.
Really? How did she start that? She was like, you had to put 25% of your money into the market?
She was a market timer. She was actually a very active investor. She was kind of forced into it. My father passed away when we were young, and my mom was very young. She was about 40 years old. So she realized that if she wanted financial stability and to give us some options in life, it was going to be the stock market. People talked to her about real estate and a lot of other things, but my mom said, you know what? I got to figure this stock market thing out. She was adamant about that 25%.
And so you put 25% of, like, what type of money were we talking about? How much were you putting in there?
Oh, this was a high school job. So if I was giving my mom $75 a week, if that was probably a lot, but $150 a month when you're 15, 16 years old.
I take that action now.
A lot of CDs that you're not buying and clothes and whatever else. Mm-hmm. But over maybe the course of 3 to 4 months, I realized there's more money in my account than I gave my mom. I'm slow, but I come around, and I thought, I got to figure this out because mom's figured something out, and I was hooked.
And so you said she was a market timer?
Unbeknownst to her, what she really started to do is read a lot. And I don't even know that she looked at charts as much as she just looked at pure price action. She'd open the business paper every day, look at the closing price, figured out if it's a level that she wanted to enter in more. She dollar cost average, but what she did on certain months was just she bought more. So if there was a particular price on a stock or a mutual fund that she thought, okay, this is where I would like to buy more, it's a better deal, she did. And she followed seasonals, and she followed some of those types of things she read about, and just kind of stumbled into being a pretty darn good investor.
Wow. Okay. And so that's what you started at. So 15?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wish we all started at 15, right? So you've been doing it for what, about 10 years then?
Right. I love it. You know what? I'll tell you what. And this is what I love about the markets. And I'm a huge Jack Bogle fan, and I have a theory. Being an investor and keeping an eye on the markets keeps you young. Jack Bogle was a genius. What he did to empower investors with index funds is amazing. But if you heard him talk, he sounded like a young man. He knew what was going on. He didn't miss a beat. And I'm convinced the markets keep you young. So I'm going to be 48 this year.
Way to go.
I got the grade approved.
Hey, you got a lot of screens behind you. For those of you guys who are just listening to the podcast, I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 screens right behind you, right?
There's 10. There's a few out of the camera shot.
Oh, wait. Yeah, there's two behind you there, too. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
What's on them? I should just ask you what's on them, because that'll probably answer the question as to what type of investing you do.
So I don't want anybody thinking you need this get up. You really don't. But I think dual monitors have been a lot of studies on dual monitor versus single monitor. It does increase productivity. I don't think you need to go quite to the ADD level that I've gone with 10, but I'm an active trader as well as an investor. And really the only difference is the time frame we look at. If I'm in and out of a market quickly, I'm usually looking at a 1 minute chart. But if I'm looking at a daily or a weekly, all I've done is I've elongated the time frame, I've elongated the commitment, and I've elongated the expectation for follow through. So I think time frame really dictates what kind of market participant you're going to be.
And so you do 1 minute market trades, like you're in and you're out, you're in and you're out.
So sometimes if there are certain kinds of events, I'm not a scalper and I'm not in and out. You talk about premature aging. I do not do that. But if I have a very intense hour or two that I think the market could move, for example, Chairman Powell is testifying on to Senate, or we have a non-farm payroll or something of that magnitude, I'll take advantage of it on a short-term time frame.
Or Trump's tweet something. Do you ever play the tweets? Be honest.
There's no way to play the tweets unless you're a momentum scalper chaser. And I don't chase anything. I'm not a dog in a car bumper. So no, I don't play that because there's no way to time it. You know, now if there's momentum based upon a scheduled event, I'm all for it. Earnings, economic data, but a tweet, no, you just kind of hide under the desk for a minute.
Jeez. So, wow. So what's your favorite type of investing right now? Like, I know you actually mentioned something really important. You said you're a trader and an investor. Explain that for folks. I have my idea of what that means and the way I teach it, but I'm kind of curious as to how you articulate it as well.
Sure. So I'll be very interested to hear how you articulate it. You're about 2 feet smarter than anybody I know. As far as myself, how I identify as an investor, it's the Warren Buffett, right? It's mm-hmm. ownership. How am I increasing the ownership of whatever it is? Doesn't matter if it's real estate, stock, ETFs, futures, whatever it is. If I'm interested in ownership, that's investing.
Yep.
Anything. Doesn't matter if it's 2 minutes or 20 years. If I'm looking to buy low, sell high, or buy high, sell higher, immediately that's a trade. And it could be a 20-year trade. If I'm not interested in increasing my ownership, it's a trade. And I think most investors, unbeknownst to them, are playing a trading game, not an investing game.
Yeah, the way you just put it is exactly. I always say when I'm investing, my holding period is forever. When I play Monopoly, I don't mm-hmm. sell stuff. I buy it and I accumulate it and I try to put hotels on it, right?
Love it.
Yeah, and if you're a trader, it means you're buying to sell. And the time frame is immaterial to me. If you're buying to sell, it's a one-time transaction and you get to make your money once. If you're an investor, you're making your money over, it could be 1,000 years. You know, it's kind of like, hey, if I bought a house in 1920 and I sold it, I've given up everything beyond that point of sale, all the appreciation, all the good stuff that comes with owning it. If I bought a company that's a strong company that's been paying out like a utility, there's utilities that's been paying out dividends for 90 years. If I sold it 80 years ago, I gave up 80 years of dividends is the way I look at it. So yeah, I get what you're saying. And there's a time and a place for both, mm-hmm. but I'm in complete agreement. In fact, I teach the Infinity Course and I look at it as like your holding period is forever because you want to have passive income for life.
That's amazing content, by the way, Toby. That's really good content you do with that Infinity program.
I'm just a lawyer. I don't do all the investments, right? But I'm smart enough to know, man, you have to work really hard sometimes. Those traders, I look at them and they look a little frazzled sometimes. I'm like, God bless you. I can't do it.
if someone decides to trade on a daily time frame, yeah. In other words, like right now I'm in a trading gold. I've been buying pullbacks in gold in a daily time frame. I'm looking at one candle per day. This isn't staring at the charts. This isn't watching it tick. That's counterproductive. That's very much an employee mindset, right? I'm not clocking in. The market could care less how much time I'm there. It's a results economy. You live in a results economy. Nobody cares how much time is spent doing, and nobody cares at all, but they want to know, is there a result at the end of the
absolutely
whatever the action is? So that's the world we live in.
So let's do the kind of the hypothetical. You went back in time, you had a time machine, and you ran across yourself when you were 15, you were getting involved in investing mm-hmm. and trading, I should say, both. What would you tell yourself? What would you tell the 15-year-old Raghi? Like, hey, avoid this, or hey, here's some areas where I really got hammered, or here's some things that have been really good for me. What would you tell yourself?
So knock on wood, I was just good at trading from the get. I got very lucky and lucky turned luckily to good. I was a pure price reader. I didn't understand macro as well as I do now. And I kept it simple. In the early stages, I kept an eye on longer term timeframes. And I drew my charts by hand, which gave me a very tactile feel for the market. I think if there's anything that I could tell myself at 15 and now at 15 is, you know, start to understand a rate of change of macroeconomics as an investor. So if I look back on my investing, say, from September, October of 2018 to now, you know, one of the things that's been really helpful for me at the present moment is the fact that I understood the rate of change of inflation in GDP, understood the money supply contraction we were seeing with the hikes and the rolling off of the balance sheet. And I started to position myself in things like utilities pretty heavily. I started to position myself in things like bonds, gold, long home builders, long construction. And I wouldn't have known to do that unless I was understanding the macroeconomic rate of change of, again, money supply, monetary policy, growth, and inflation. So that's probably something I would have encouraged young Raghi to do, kind of get into the minutiae of that. Luckily, I did in my later 20s, and that was the foundation of a macroeconomic study that's run parallel with my investing. I couldn't do without it.
You mentioned a lot of the monetary stuff, and some people don't know what a Forex market is. Maybe just give an idea of how much you're involved in those and what it means. I remember I had you on a few weeks ago on one of our mastermind calls, and it was very interesting to hear you speak. But I'm kind of curious if you could touch on a few of the stuff on the Forex and all that.
Sure. So I think there's a lot of fear about Forex because I think stocks just have a better PR department. They've mm-hmm. done a better job of convincing people that they should understand stocks and that they should invest in them. And I think that's completely untrue. We tend to think because we own, you know, a Kindle or we own a, you know, iPhone that suddenly we understand Amazon and Apple. So untrue, right? Forex is trading money for money. I mean, literally. And the best analogy that I know of is imagine that we all jump on a plane to JFK, land in, say, Charles de Gaulle. We're converting our U.S. dollars into euro. What is the rate at which we get euro for each U.S. dollar in our pocket? That's it. And then I'm trading that exchange rate. I think the fact that there's always two things at play when you're trading Forex sort of bakes some people's noodle because you're buying one currency and selling the other. But I think that's a little confusing because really all we're doing is exchanging it. Same thing, it's that airport analogy. Here are my dollars. How many euro am I going to get in return? And that's what we're trading. And there's nothing more tangible than that. I mean, that is the most real thing in the world. After that, it's commodities to me. It's a grocery store to the world. To me, stocks fall way underneath that in terms of that tangible understanding. I get beans more than I get Cisco.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty interesting. What's going on in the Forex market now?
Forex is interesting because Jerome Powell's shifted his tone. He's sounding a whole lot more accommodative as of Jan 4, and the markets have been taking off ever since. And if you've got a more accommodative central bank, typically the currency of that country is going to fall in anticipation of lower rates, or at least in anticipation of no more rate hikes, which mm-hmm. is where we're at right now. But there's that saying in Forex, the cleanest shirt in the dirty laundry, and that's what the U.S. dollar is right now. So anytime you're playing Forex, anytime you're playing currencies, and by the way, there are currency ETFs, there are currency futures, and there is the currency market of foreign exchange. They all behave the same way. It's one currency for another. So if I want to short the U.S. dollar, which I don't want to do, but if I wanted to short the U.S. dollar, my number one job is to go find a currency that's stronger than it. So that as the U.S. dollar loses ground, this other thing, whatever it may be, you got it. And there's just nothing out there right now. So my favorite shorts are the euro because Europe's data, the data in the U.S. is awful. And you'd never guess it looking at the equities markets, but it is awful. Well, if you look at what's happening with GDP, we've been contracting steadily despite the Q2 spike that we saw in 2018, which was just front-running the Chinese tariffs. The GDP has steadily been contracting. We put in peak inflation in July of 2018. We've been contracting there ever since. You take a look at the retail numbers that we got just about a week ago. They were awful. Holiday sales were nowhere near the kind of rev that we wanted to see. We continue to see very inflated EPS, which I've been basically calling EBS because of all the buybacks we saw in 2018. The EPS have been continuing to be, but guidance forward for 2019 and even 2020, and also revenue have been missing or disappointing, and yet the market just doesn't care. So when you break all this down to a rate of change, whether you're looking at wage inflation colliding with the lower revenue, if I'm a corporation, that's horrifying. I'm making less money and I'm paying my workers more than ever, yes, which is great for the workers, but corporately, from a corporate standpoint, that's a perfect storm for disaster. So that's what I mean by awful data. Europe's even worse than us. Europe is even worse.
How do you hedge?
So I've been shorting Italy. I've been shorting France. I've been shorting Germany. I'm short the euro. I'm long bunds. So I'm playing Europe, quite frankly, more aggressively than I'm playing the U.S. I was short the equities markets in October of 2018 and was really happy until Jerome Powell finally uttered the word patience and the market believed him. And we've, you know, been obviously rallying ever since. And I don't want to sound like a permabear. I'm not. And I certainly don't want to be a fearmonger because I quite frankly despise those suits and ties on chucklehead financial media. But the truth of the matter is at some point we're going to have to pay the piper. And unless Jerome Powell can really start to convince companies to reinvest, not in buybacks, we start to see better GDP and inflation gets back on track, we're going to revisit those lows.
Yeah. And I think what, for some folks who don't know what a buyback is, it's when the company is buying back its own shares to inflate its share price, or just because they think it's a really good deal right now and they're betting on the future. It's hard to see betting on the future when your earnings are lower. But the weird thing with the earnings is they slash taxes by what, you know, almost 50%. I mean, they gave them a pretty massive cut, and we're still seeing this. Like this week we saw Heinz just get clobbered, right?
Poor Warren. He lost $4 billion this week.
Yeah, he doesn't care. He's looking. He's probably buying more. He did that with GE. Everybody was screaming about GE. What was he doing? Including, but it was, I think he was increasing his stake, if I remember right.
He's been buying banks. He's been backing the truck up and buying banks. I think he's seeing the same thing that you and I talked about a few weeks ago. Jerome Powell and the FOMC are probably going to do their best to reinvest on the lower end of the yield curve if they keep a bigger balance sheet. And that's going to serve the financials just fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's everybody that's in real estate seeing the numbers, homeownership's declining, the rents are going up though. So it's kind of like you got these interesting markets, things that we haven't seen in a long time. The student debt, what was it, $1.5 trillion or some ridiculous number for student loans. They're mm-hmm. not able to even qualify for the houses. So if you're a landlord, it's great data. If you're everybody else, you're like, oh man, this is kind of vicious. Yeah. And what you just said, this, you're seeing the wage inflation as a business owner with a couple hundred employees. I see it. And yeah, and it's getting leaner and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Are you looking to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and grow your wealth? Are you a real estate investor, stock trader, or business owner? If you answered yes, Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection Workshop is for you. Let host Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman teach you how to protect and keep more of what you earn. Our workshops are held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. Two in-person tickets to the workshop are only $99. To learn more about the dates and locations, visit AndersonAP.com and register today.
So go back to, where do you spend your time during the day? Is it mostly equities, Forex? Where do you spend most of your time?
I always encourage traders to just understand that the financial markets are like a playground, seesaw, merry-go-round, swing, slides. You want to play on all of it. I don't want to spend the rest of my life on a seesaw. So I know a lot of people like to, you know, spend their time specializing in a market or even a symbol. And I would never want to do that because you're going to force trades, you're going to force investments that just shouldn't be there. So once you understand the interconnectivity of dollar, gold, equities, copper, crude oil, ETF, sectors, it all just turns into one long, glorious sentence. And it's just a matter of putting those together. So I really want to play all the interconnected markets. To me, a yen trade in Forex can lead to a trade in equities. If equities are moving a certain way, I might end up in a sector ETF. If there's a particularly strong stock in that ETF, I might end up owning that. So it's all connected. It's all, to me, one big sentence.
And are you worried about a big pullback or a big collapse of a market? Or are you kind of looking forward to it saying, hey, I'm going to be able to play that thing down?
Wow. You know, I hate to say I'm looking forward to it because it is such a callous thing to say when you think about people's retirements and the fact that most people are long only and they don't have hedges. But aside from that, absolutely. I was short in October. I'd love to be short again. That's what the macros are pointing to. The fact that Powell is literally holding this market up with that single pillar of patience is the biggest bunch of BS right now that I can see. I just cannot imagine running headlong into this market thinking that, you know, the slowdown in China is fixed somehow. The slowdown in Europe isn't going to become a recession. I don't think we're going to end up in a major recession here in the U.S. But like I said, I just can't imagine wanting to pile in back into the stock market because the head poobah, the FOMC, uttered the word patience. So I would like to see it move down. I think it's going to move down. And I'd like to see people buy bonds, buy gold, buy utilities, and hedge and protect themselves in that way.
Nobody's been doing it, though. Bonds have been down and gold's been down, right?
Well, I mean, you know, long bonds, short yield. If you want to buy TLT, that's been a great position. You want to buy SHY, GLD, the miners. Those have been great long positions, being long REITs. BNQ, being long real estate, XLU, those have actually been, they're not sexy, right? It's not like jumping back in to say, you know, Amazon or Apple or Microsoft again, but they are going to play out well, especially bonds, no matter what happens in the next 12 months.
It's been weird because interest rates, like, again, I thought that bonds were inverse, but they're kind of matching. it's been kind of odd, at least the folks that I know that are bond traders, and there's people that's how they make their living. It's just doing bonds. And they're like, this is kind of weird. Usually when equities are going up, bonds are going down. When equities are going down, bonds are going up. And that didn't seem to be happening.
And that, and you're absolutely right. That's one of those things that people have to stop and scratch their heads about. What are bonds telling us about the future of yields, the play on real yields and the play on inflation? I mean, gold is telling us the same thing. Something's not quite right and something's going to give. My money's on the equities markets. That's what's going
on. Well, I think you have 10 years of growth. I think the odds are in your favor. There's going to be a pullback. It's just a question of how much.
Right.
Love talking to folks like yourself that are in this stuff day in and day out. So is that the big issue that everybody's facing right now is, hey, what's the Fed going to do? Or when is the piper going to come to be paid? Is that the big issue that everybody's facing? Or is there anything else that we have to be aware of? The tariffs I know are out there. We have, seems like there's a lot of uncertainty in the world. You got Venezuela, you got presidential investigations into Russia. You have all these things. What's the big one right now that's on everybody's mind?
So I think if we look at all of this news, you know, categorized into one of four things, if it's geopolitics, you know, I think Venezuela is very much geopolitics, and that's a battle for who's going to control or be a part of what we know now is the largest proven oil reserve on Earth right now. So obviously I get what's happening there, and I understand why we want Guaido in and Maduro out, and really what's happening there is a humanitarian crisis. I don't want to turn this into a trade. What's happening to the Venezuelan people is positively criminal. It's horrible there. That should be a much richer country considering the proven oil reserves they have. And I'd like to see whatever it is that gets done for that situation to improve. And they benefit, and let's face it, the rest of the planet benefits as well in terms of, well, the rest of the economies benefit. We have about a 1 million per day production out of Venezuela right now. But with the sanctions that we see going on, there's a lot of Venezuelan tankers just floating around with nowhere to go. The sanctions on Venezuela are much tougher than the ones that were placed on Iran. There's no exemptions. But that's a real geopolitical issue. It is affecting supply. If you take a look at what's happening with the trade war, I haven't seen a buy the rumor set up, buy the rumor, sell the news set up like this U.S.-China negotiations. Okay, suddenly we end up with an agreement. What's compliance going to be like? Is a multi-generation, multi-decade IP theft type mindset going to suddenly turn around because there's a law? Really? I don't think the People's Bank of China can print their way out of the problems that they have in the financial sector in China. That's why they've been lowering the fix with the Asian markets. They've been printing money, and they're trying to just hold the banks together with their bare hands. There's a bigger problem at play in China right now. They're not going to have a Western-style recession because they own all their own debt, but they've got a slowdown on their hands that preceded the trade wars. So we get the trade war solution, whatever that might be. I think the markets actually take a downturn because the hyperbole of the trade wars continue to be a reason for the fear of missing out, the FOMO momentum players to continue to buy. At some point, if Jerome Powell cannot convince the market that he's willing to be accommodative and that he's willing to keep a larger balance sheet and we don't see data improve, what's he going to do then? And I think we start to see the stock market turn down. That's a real issue. That's a real macroeconomic.
Are you thinking, like, again, I don't want to get into newsy stuff and all that fun stuff, but, you know, they say patience. Is there a risk they're going to pull back interest rates? Or do you think they're just going to, like the idea of patience is they're just not going to hike them as fast? Because they keep talking about cooling this down, but based off of what I just heard you say, it's already cooled down and it's actually contracting.
It has been contracting since last year. And I think one of the reasons they were playing denial, I can't imagine they're that stupid, although who knows. When it comes to the FOMC, and not just Jerome Powell at the helm, there has never been an FOMC that's actually seen a slowdown ahead of time. In fact, they're the ones creating the bubbles, and then they're the ones going about fixing their messes. So they play their own cleanup crew. And he inherited quite a mess, and so did Yellen. And Yellen inherited it from Bernanke. And Bernanke, you know, inherited it from the biggest Wall Street rock star probably of all time, which was Greenspan. And so it's just been a succession of people having to clean up the prior person's mess. So I think ultimately what we have with Powell was they really wanted to get that to that 3 or 3.25%. And they didn't get to because the market threw a tantrum when they both started letting the roll off on the balance sheet happen as well as hiking. It was too much. It was too much for the market. So we saw that finally cave in on itself. And I think they want to pause for as long as they can before cuts, because quite frankly, they're not at levels that they wanted to be at before they started to cut. So they can slow down the unwind of the balance sheet, which is probably what they'll do. They'll keep a bigger balance sheet by the year's end.
Mm-hmm. That's still Okay. What do you do to protect yourself?
So whenever we see the market run back into risk appetite, you know, we see the bounce since the fourth, we see traders go back into the things they liked before, high beta, high momentum names. How can I buy Netflix? How can I buy Apple, Nvidia, things of that.
Talking about traders, because an investor would look at those and freak out.
I think investors have been in those markets. I think they love being long tech and semis.
And it's so weird. It's like a company that's not giving you anything for your money. That just trips me out. I'm like, you literally were worried about inflation and you're giving a company a no interest loan on the hope that they grow.
That's exactly it, right? We're funding that. We're funding that. So I think most investors and traders go right back to those names that they remember for, as you said, the past 5-10 years that have been giving them those great returns. But what I would recommend, what I am recommending and have since October, and I haven't changed my mind, what I'm doing with my own portfolio is long gold, long silver, long real estate, long REITs. So things like XLRE, VNQ, XLU, and selectively into healthcare. I wouldn't necessarily run into XLV, but there are certain names within the XLV. Johnson & Johnson, funny enough, included, even though they had their talcum powder debacle. Lilly, Merck, J&J. You can look at healthcare. And then I would look at things like Staples selectively and stay there because, again, there's always going to be opportunity. I never want to fearmonger to the point where we say, oh, the markets are all going to head lower. Now, there are places where you can keep your equity curve smoother. I don't want to have these roller coaster divots in my equity curve. I just want a nice, gradual equity curve. I don't need that sexy move rocket ship higher. You know, in fact, that's the stuff that gets most people into trouble.
How are you going long gold and silver?
GLD is a good ETF for gold. I like the underlying futures contract, but I realize not everyone wants to deal with rollover and futures and things like that. So GLD is a terrific ETF for that. SLV, terrific ETF for silver. Copper is not going to give you a lot of opportunities. It's a very illiquid copper ETF. Mm-hmm. That's going to be probably playing Freeport MacMoran FCX as a proxy. Or if you want to get into futures, you can do that. Or the options.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Where do you teach and how do people find you and things like that?
Sure. So I teach over at, well, I actually show people my trades and trade live over at simplertrading.com. I usually try to be a little less decaffeinated than I am right now. But
you're good. You're hyper.
I love what I do, right? And you know, and watching you present, I love watching you because look, you love what you do. You're world-class at it. That's what I love about this. I would be doing this anyways. I just happen to be doing it in front of a mic with a screen share on. But I love this game. I love this game. So I'm over at Simpler Trading every morning and sharing with folks what I've shared with you today.
Fantastic. And so you're there every morning, like you could actually sit there and watch what you're doing every day?
Every morning.
I like that. All right. Well, is there anything else you want to add? Because if not, I'm like, I've just been really, really happy to have you come on and share a little bit. Some of the guys are going out there going, oh, what the heck was she talking about? So, you know, this is their impetus to learn more so that they can follow your language.
I know it's dizzying at first. I think what I really encourage folks to do and the fact that this kind of education, what to do in the stock market, how to understand the stock market, the fact that this isn't taught in high school and in college is just pathetic to me. It really angers me because this is one of those things that you have to be your own advocate in the market. Wall Street is not looking out for you. They just want your money. And it's not a situation, you know, what you're teaching people, which is what I love about Anderson from day one, you are empowering people with the knowledge that, you know, they don't want you to tell people what you've been telling people for 20 years now. How long you've been empowering people to make better decisions as business owners, as real estate investors?
Yeah, same thing. 20 years.
20 years, right.
How long have we known each other? How long have you known about Anderson and worked with Anderson?
I've been a fangirl for a whole lot longer than I've known you. I've been watching you and Clip for many, many years. You guys have been a big motivating factor for me. I think what wowed me the most and what I hope that the listeners take away from this is nobody cares more about your money than you do. And yep. You've got to structure yourself like a business. And you've got to think about protecting your assets. And that's your mantra. And I believe in that wholeheartedly. I just take that over to the financial markets where there's no kid coming from an Ivy League school that is going to do better than an individual with an education managing your money. And so I really want people to take that power back. And
I like what your mom did. If I could say to everybody, just do that, then just do that. force your kids to learn, force your kids to get involved. There's nothing better than doing. I never even realized that. We've worked together in some capacity over more than a decade, I believe. And you look at it and you're like, this is one, you always learn something new about somebody. I had no idea that your mom was the one who made you do it. I knew that you were trading when you were in your teens. And I always look at people and say, you're going to be so ahead of the curve if you start when you're young. But I didn't realize that it was your mom that kind of pushed you to do it.
She did. And then I had a few key mentors that came along. A bond trader taught me early on. I had a person with a background in global investment who really taught me what I know about macroeconomics and the whole cycle of macro with inflation and GDP. But I had a lot of mentors come along and help me out. But my mom, yeah, absolutely started it.
It always comes back to mom. Well, thank you very much, Raggy. I really appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Thanks so much, Toby. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.